Good afternoon. This is Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. My guest today is writer Tatiana Soli. Soli's novel, The Lotus Eaters, was a New York Times notable book for 2010, and her second book, The Forgetting Tree, was a New York Times notable book for 2012. Her third novel, The Last Good Paradise, was published in 2015. She's also had two short stories recognized by Best American Short Stories. Tatiana is in town this month as a writer in residence for Aspen Words. She's using the time to put the finishing touches on her fourth novel, The Removes, which is due out in June 2018. So there is a pretty rigorous application process to be a writer in residence for Aspen Words. Can you talk about what that process was like?
I've never done a writer residency before because it seemed a little forbidding to be all alone with your writing. And I felt like it was the time, and I've been, you know, a lot of life things intruding. And so I just wanted that concentrated time. And so I was looking around for a residency. And I knew Adrienne Brodeur from the old days when I was a short story writer. And I talked to her about the residency, and she got me really excited, and she made me brave enough to apply. And so the rest of it is just, you know, getting my materials ready. I'm not the most organized person.
Did you think you were going to get it when you applied?
You know, I actually did not. I just thought, you know, it's like those things that you put out into the universe, and if you hear back from them, it's great. I tried not to think about it very much.
What was it like for you to get that call?
It was exciting. I think actually Adrienne called me or emailed me right before Christmas, and she said, I have a Christmas present for you. So that was great. And it's funny because, you know, in December, you have no idea where you're going to be in your work, you know, when something for next September. But it's worked out perfectly because I'm at the place where I needed to have that period of time left alone because I'm doing final revisions on my novel. And I lucked out the way, you know, timing worked. So it's been really nice.
So tell me what it means to be a writer in residence. What do your days look like? What's the month going to look like for you?
You know, my original plan was to work on a new novel. And so, you know, it's incredible to not have, you know, the constant disruptions of life, like, you know, taking the dog to the vet and having to go grocery shopping and everything. So I'm staying at this beautiful guest house out in Woody Creek. And it's just wonderful not to have any interruptions and to, you know, get up in the morning and think about the book and go to bed at night and think about the book. And I'm a night owl, so I stay up really late. And I don't have anybody complaining about my hours. So it's been a real luxury. And you, besides the quantity of work, I think, you know, a lot of writers, especially the way I do revision, is more like of a creative revision. And so I like to read, and I like to think, and I like to walk. And you know, things happen. You think of things that just wouldn't have happened any other way if you were on a tight schedule and you were just, you know, looking at mechanical revision. And so, yeah, it's a wonderful experience. I'm hooked.
Did you leave family behind to come?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. I left my mom, and I have just bought a new house in Monterey. And so I left her with a pile of workers and boxes and everything. And so she's been really generous to let me go. And my beloved golden retriever, who I miss. I just desperate. This is the worst part. I don't want to tell anybody else that, but the dog is what I miss. Thank God I'm borrowing a couple dogs, but it's not the same.
Right. Yeah. Does it feel like a blessing or a curse in some ways to leave your family, your dog, and your mom in Monterey?
You know, I think in the past, I always thought, you know, it was, you think, oh my God, I just can't be gone that long. But, you know, I did make arrangements and everything. And you know, my family has been really supportive. And in a way, it's really good. I think, you know, they understand how important the writing is to me. And this is, you know, a luxury. So I actually feel better about it than I thought I would. Yeah.
So you're here working on your current project, The Removes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that project and what you're doing with it this month?
Sure. My first novel was about Vietnam, and I'm a military buff. And so I was reading about the 7th Cavalry, and I came across just this offhand comment by somebody, and I don't remember who it was, reading about Custer. And I thought, oh, Custer, you know, we all have this knee-jerk reaction that he's, you know, the big Indian, you know, hater and killer, and that he did all this stuff. And they were saying, you know, he wasn't that bad of a guy. And I said, oh, that's a joke. But I did start to read, and they talked about his book, My Life on the Plains, which is kind of, you know, not exactly a journal because he did creative writing. Mm-hmm. He tried to make himself sound better. But he was such an interesting person. And I do not like Westerns. Like when I was a little and a teenager, I would never watch Westerns. But what interested me is, you know, how simplistic the old Westerns were, the old movies, you know, the John Wayne movies. And now we have the new Westerns, which are kind of flipping that, but they're almost as simplistic in the opposite way. And I was, when you start reading history and you realize how complex these people are, it's just so much more nuanced. And when I started reading about, you know, exploring the country, like when I'm driving from Woody Creek to Aspen, I just look at this incredible, you know, nature and the hills and the trees. And, you know, I'm a writer. I can block out the road and the houses and everything. And there's this incredible idea that these people came into this empty country and they, you know, settled down. It was just an incredible thing. And then, of course, you know, the Indian culture is so nuanced, so complex, is so much more involved than, you know, the stories that we were giving. And so I just fell into the research. And so even though I'm not a historical writer and I'm not that interested in Westerns, I just fell into the material and loved it. So I wrote a captivity narrative about a girl who gets abducted by Indians. And I'm also talking about Custer and his career post-Civil War and what it was like to come out, you know, to the Badlands, to Kansas, which was, you know, had just become a state, going off to the Dakota and Montana territories. And I also came across his wife, who was absolutely interesting, you know, kind of, you know, a little bit high society woman. I mean, she, you know, she came from, her father was a judge, you know, she was the belle of her, you know, small town. And she fell in love with a soldier and came out to the wilderness, which what an incredible hardship. Life was just so hard. And so the material kind of took me away. So I have been working on it. And I thought it was going to be a quick book. And now it's going to be published about 3 years. Yeah, later. It always ends up being 3 years, no matter how hard you try.
Uh-huh. You've been immersed.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you said that Westerns were simplistic.
Yeah.
Do you mean that there's a clear-cut good guy and a bad guy?
Exactly, exactly. And it was so much more nuanced. I'm talking to some historians, Peter Cousins. He wrote The Earth is Weeping, and so he's helping me to make sure that I don't make any, you know, horrible mistakes, you know, history-wise. But I do consider this a creative imagining. So even though, you know, the big facts are all there, I'm switching people to be in a certain scene. I'm trying to make the plot, you know, not as convoluted. So, you know, this is a fiction. It's not a nonfiction, but of course everything has to be somewhat accurate. But, you know, I'm imagining what life was like for Custer and Libby, who really existed, and I have a lot of imaginary characters who are alongside them. So it's a more creative endeavor. But a lot of even the nonfiction histories, you know, they had all of the new history is that all of the military and all military men, you know, were you know, wanted to eradicate the Indians. They were all evil. They were all conquerors. You know, it was all about empire. And there were a lot of people who came out here and got thrown into the culture, the Native American culture, and they really became advocates of them. And they thought what the U.S. government was doing was wrong. And then you had a lot of peace people back east who wanted to not, have war on the Indians, but they still wanted them to live on their reservation. They still wanted them to become Christians and farmers, which was totally the opposite of what Indian culture was. I mean, it basically killed them. It took the heart out of them. And so it's just so much more interesting than, you know, the good guy in the white hat and the bad guy in the black hat or you know, how the Indians were always trying to kill the white people or that they were totally pacifists. It's just much more complex and much more interesting. And, you know, I always see parallels, and I see a lot of, you know, the way my mind works, I see a lot of parallels about the way our military was in Vietnam. I see that, and in the current wars, it's kind of, there's a lot of the characteristics of being an American that are, you know, you can trace them back to what our country was really like back then.
What do you think now, looking at our country, has writing this made you more empathetic? Because we also seem so divided, and a lot of people see good guys and bad guys, and that's it now.
I know, you know, it always surprised me. It surprised me when I was writing about Vietnam because when I went out to speak, I was mostly, you know, put with all the Iraqi war writers and all that, and they were all saying, you know, this is the same thing, the same exact issues. Hardly anything really changed except for the draft between those two wars, and it was a very divided country. And of course, where our country is now, so scary and so divided. And yeah, it's I think all historians just comment on how much has changed and how little has changed.
Yeah. So you have three published novels. Mm. The Lotus Eaters is about a female combat photographer mm-hmm. during the Vietnam War. The Forgetting Tree is about a woman who runs a citrus ranch. Is that right?
Uh-huh.
And she navigates challenges with that. And then The Last Good Paradise is about characters, female characters who uproot their lives, live on an island, and they undergo pretty dramatic personal change. So it seems that all those books have this theme of bravery, of women taking risks, of taking some kind of leap. What inspires you about that?
I mean, obviously, I'm a female writer, so I want to write about the female experience. When I was writing about Vietnam, I read all of the male writers who were soldiers, and I knew Tim O'Brien, Robert Stone, they wrote the great novels about Vietnam. They were there, and they wrote about it. But I felt like you know, because of the distance from that war, I thought there were a certain type of book had not been written, and that was about the civilian casualties that happen and about the Americans that are sympathetic to that. And so in a way, using a woman and a photographer, I mean, I can pour myself into that because, you know, that's the way that I explored the material, is that she didn't know anything about the war, and she became you know, overwhelmed by it and totally went inside it. And so for me, that's an easy lens to get into the material. But it's also, I think, when I choose subject matters that aren't the typical female subject matters, I think it's an interesting perspective to always take the outsider, and women are always outsiders in that. So even in The Removes, Libby's the outsider. She doesn't have any idea what the frontier military is going to involve. She has no idea what frontier life is going to involve. She has no idea what it's like to be threatened, you know, physically every day, basically. And so I think I use the women because it's a good lens, and, you know, because that's my own experience and it tells about that. I don't think I choose it on purpose. I have a lot of good male characters. I end up having a lot of male readers because of my subject matter. So I try not to make it that narrow.
It seems like there are stories now and movies that have kind of a strong female characters, that there is a recognition that women are brave as well. Do you see that as a trend?
I definitely do. Actually, I've been, just the way things work, I have been working on a screenplay for my first book. And what's so interesting is how in film, I think, you know, the book buying, it's mostly women, and most of the editors are women. And so even though, you know, male writers obviously, you know, get a lion's share of the reviews and things like that, book publishing is still a lot about women. Film is the opposite. It's mostly men. And yet all of these new female actresses are taking over producer roles. They're, you know, starting to be female directors, and they're starting to have female-centric films and subject matter. And so, especially on cable, they're just doing incredible work. And this is like really brand new, like in the last three years, maybe, that has just really taken off. And it's exciting because a project like this probably wouldn't even had a chance before. And now it's considered viable because women are, you know, starting to see that they want those strong roles, that they want to be the center, the lead in a strong story. And so I think it's an exciting time.
So you mentioned this a little bit, and I saw a quote that you got some writing advice from a professor who said, you should write books you want to read, but that don't exist yet. That seems like it takes a little bravery as well, requires you to take a leap and put something out there that is new and that is different. Does it feel like it takes some bravery to write those books that don't exist?
It does. I mean, in a way, I think, you know, like when you go into a bookstore and you see some books that are kind of like in certain genres, I always think, wow, I'd like to write one of those because it would be fun to just be writing. But my first published novel happened when I was in my mid-40s. And so I take as long as it takes me to write a novel and to get it published, I take it very seriously. Like, how many books am I going to come up with? And I want to write books that I'm proud of. So even though all of mine are very different, they're all things that I was interested in, you know, writing. There were specific reasons that I wrote each one, even though they're very different. And so, yeah, there's a little bit more pressure on you if you aren't, you know, considered, you know, certain writers are only known for certain type of books, certain types of themes. And when you jump like that, I think you get, there's still a little bit more resistance to that in publishing, which is actually more than in film, because you can have actors that'll do dramas and do comedies. Mm-hmm. But in writing, they expect you to write one way. And I'm sure my publisher would wish I would write one particular type of book, because it would be easier to categorize. But I, you know, for me as a writer, this is the way I have to do it. You have to be so invested in the material, because you're with it for so long. And so I don't want to ever be writing, you know, books that I've already written. I want to explore new territory. And so I'm pushing myself a lot too, because I'm always having to go do a lot of research with experts and everything, because I don't know anything about that. But that's exactly what led me to that. Uh-huh. So it's a double-edged sword, but it's the way I can work.
That's writer Tatiana Soli in Aspen as a writer in residence for Aspen Words. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. The Removed, you've been working on for 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. And that was going to be my quickie book.
Right. So that seems like a part of your process, or a part of writing books that are so different, is that it does take you quite a while.
The historical novels, which would be The Lotus Eaters and The Removes, the material is so rich that the books have expanded. I had to actually cut The Lotus Eaters way down from what it grew into, mm-hmm. and The Removes has become a much bigger book. So I think there's a similarity in that. And my goal is to write a short novel, but I'm not getting there. I have a very good editor, and she just will ask open-ended questions. I think this is how she prods me to fill in the material. And every time I turn the manuscript back in, it's like 50 pages fatter. And it's good stuff, and it pushes me to go areas that I wouldn't have explored, but that are necessary. And I kind of see, in looking back, like in The Removes, I had a very tight story in mind. And because of the areas that my editor was interested in that I hadn't explored, it grew into a much more, I wouldn't say epic, but a much wider, a lot more characters, a lot more going on, more time span and all that. So this seems to be a theme that I have, which is kind of scary. I hope I never get up into the 800 pages and right. become a doorstop.
And you also mentioned historical fiction, that mm-hmm. The Lotus Eaters is historical fiction, and The Removes, your new project, is as well. Mm-hmm. What draws you to that?
You know, I don't look at it as historical fiction. I look at it as subject matter, and I try to write it like it's, you know, today's news. I don't want to make it, you know, with a certain kind of language and have a certain kind of, like, you want to use it as a school primer, mm-hmm. where you learn a lot right. about history. You have to learn a lot about history, and my history better be pretty good. But I want it to be pretty much like a film, where you walk in and you're totally immersed in this very fresh and new experience. I mean, that's kind of my goal when writing about that material. I want you to feel like you were really there, that you know what it was like to be through a blizzard in North Dakota, and what it was like to be on the prairies in Kansas, and, you know, dying of thirst and hot. And I want that immersive experience. So that's kind of what excites me about it. So I don't look at it as historical fiction as much. I don't read that much historical fiction. I don't like it when, you know, it's a little bit removed. I like to have a very very sensual experience, so that you really are into those scenes.
Is that a challenge ever, to balance kind of the research and the facts with the creativity and immersing people in yeah. an experience?
So when I write, it's all in scene, and it's all having that sensory experience. And I think this is where my editor has been, you know, leading me, like, we need to know what's going on. And to me, that's less important than just having the experience. But of course, mm-hmm. you know, both of them have to be balanced. And the thing that I don't want is to have it so overbalanced on the history side that you feel like you're reading a nonfiction book. I want you to have that fun experience, or not exactly fun, because it's fairly violent, but I want you to have that immersive experience where you're hooked. Mm-hmm. So that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I just finished The Last Good Paradise, which I loved for a story, but I also loved the connections with The Tempest mm-hmm. By Shakespeare. And I just wondered if you could talk about that a little bit as well, would you call that, I mean, a modern adaptation? Would you call it a tribute?
Yeah, one of my heroes is Cormac McCarthy, and he always says books are made out of other books. Mm-hmm. And so when I was writing about the islands, because I've always, I mean, I love the idea of being on a deserted island, which is kind of like a, being a writer in residence, where you're all by yourself in the middle of nowhere. But I did a lot of thematic reading, and of course I did a lot of Moby Dick references too. But you know, this is a kind of a comedy, so it was tongue in cheek. But I think you this is how those little kind of sparks of inspiration. And it wasn't for me for as much as for the characters. The characters are playing with being at this time in their life where they're running away from things and being isolated. So I was definitely at that place in my life. And so to me, that's just that was probably the closest experience to just daily life for me, you know, and the issues that you're dealing with. Obviously, when I'm dealing with bigger subject matter, that goes away. But in all my books, I usually have a lot of cross reference. I read deeply when I'm writing. And so a lot of that stuff comes in, and the writers that I love have a lot of that. So I think, yeah, you always pay tribute to the books that you admire and that, you know, caused you to write, you know, that specific work. And it makes it richer. And of course, you always have to be aware of everything, you know, around you. And I also love when I do a reading and people say, oh, because you mentioned that book so much, I went out and read The Tempest, or I went out and read Moby Dick. You know, it's kind of fun. Yeah.
I noticed you were born in Austria. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And you really have traveled extensively throughout your life, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite places you've been?
Oh, my gosh. When I was little, my mom was an interpreter, so we lived in southern Italy. So in my heart, like, I'm Italian. I wish I was Italian. So I guess the most interesting trip that I took, well, I had gone to Vietnam after the hardback came out, before the paperback, and that was the first time I had been in Vietnam. And that was such an interesting experience because I'd been working. So The Lotus Eaters was my first book, and it took a long time to publish, and I had been working on it for such a long time. And, of course, I was, you know, immersed in the time during the war. And so to go there and to see South Vietnam, the part that was South Vietnam, in a contemporary setting, I mean, because you are in really dark subject matter, and it's very sad. And so you go there, you know, with this heavy heart. And of course, I went to the war crimes museum in Ho Chi Minh City, which I still call Saigon because it's more romantic. And, you know, there's such a burden as an American to go there. And yet the people were so kind, and a lot of the older people were so kind. And then when you go into the south, into the small villages like in Can Tho and everything, you can actually like squint. It's kind of like squinting in Aspen and seeing early America. You can kind of squint there and see what it was like back then, and you know, the peasant life, and what an overwhelming experience it was to have this major war in a place like that. And so Vietnam is totally redoing itself and prosperous, and people are doing well. And so for me, even writing about the war and how devastated the country was, you know, after the war, it's kind of a healing thing to go there and to see the beauty and to see it rebuilding and becoming more prosperous. Still very poor country, still very third world, but still it was a great experience. And it was, you know, very moving, very strange to have been reading about Da Nang and now see 5-star hotels there. I think that's still hard. I'm sure I've talked to a lot of military, and they just can't see going there. Yeah, I think if you a certain age, you know, that's kind of hard.
Uh-huh. Do you feel like travel has affected or influenced your writing or you as a writer?
I think because I'm an American because I came as a little girl, so I feel totally American in outlook. And when I go to Europe, they look at me as an American. But because my mom was in Europe until she was an adult, I was raised, you know, feeling European also. I can try to have empathy with different people. I think, you know, different cultures meeting and the clashes of culture, I think that's one of the themes that's in all of my books. And I think that's because I have traveled a lot. So I do a lot of stuff with colleges and everything and talking to young people. And I mean, that's the most essential thing you can give your kids and the younger generation, is that they have to go out there and see all these people that they have opinions about and form their own opinions. you know? Mm-hmm. I think because of the way our country is, because we're such a big country, we can be very insulated by our culture, which overwhelms the world, and by our country, which is so large, you don't have to leave the country. And especially now that things are as dangerous, you know, I think Americans are staying home at more, which is really dangerous.
Mm.
Yeah.
You were talking about like culture clashes. Do you have a character who stands out in your mind who you've written, who you're really proud of showing their evolution?
You know, I think that's kind of like the goal for all of my books. Probably the obvious choice would be Helen in The Lotus Eaters, because she goes there as, you know, and, you know, she's kind of like a proxy for America. She goes there as this young, innocent, stupid girl. She's, you know, and she really evolves into to understanding, you know, and feeling guilty for what's happened and then trying to help. And she goes through a big personal evolution. I think one of the characters that people gravitated to much more than Helen was Lin, who was the Vietnamese man in the book. And of course, I poured everything into trying to get to know him and to talk about him as a proxy for, you know, what happened to that country and how the Vietnamese, well, many of the Vietnamese that worked for the Americans, they liked the Americans. They were sympathetic to that, but they, of course, loved their country. They were nationalists. So his evolution and balancing this very hard thing of having your country destroyed and, yeah, having people come here. And so I think I try to make that evolution for all the characters that are like me, the females. And I feel I pour myself into a lot of the male characters. Our writing about Custer was really, really difficult. And a lot of the drafts, I refused to use his name. Of course, at the end, I had to put his name in because my editor said, you know, it's just too weird not to. But I didn't want to have this knee-jerk reaction that he's this person that we have in history. In early history, he was considered a hero. Now he's an absolute, criminal. He's terrible, and yet he was a very complicated person with a lot of flaws, but with a lot of interesting things that you can find out about him when you read about him. So to make him, I don't want you to fall in love with him and think he's a great person, and I also don't want you to think he's a villain. I want to make him a very complex character who had his own problems, evolving from being a Civil War hero to being a frontier, you know, Indian fighter. And so that evolution is what keeps me writing. Actually, that's what keeps it interesting. Because the evolution of the characters changes as you're writing over the years.
So you'll be doing a reading September 18th.
Yes.
And can I just ask about, do you have a philosophy or a process you go through? How do you decide what to read? How do you approach readings in public?
I try to read really short because people get bored. Uh-huh. So I keep the readings short. I like to do the interactive thing, but, uh-huh. You know, there's usually a scene that, can work on its own and give you a feeling, or a scene that maybe will spark conversation or give you, an idea. I actually don't want to read from any of my past work. I want to read, I'm so immersed in this new book. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to read the beginning of the new book. So that'll be the first time I've read it out loud. So that'll be exciting for me. Nobody else will care. But, so that's fun.
Uh-huh. Well, Tatiana Sully, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
You've been listening to Cross Currents. I'm Kristen Kay. Thanks to my guest today, Tatiana Sully, Aspen Words current writer in residence. Tatiana will be reading from her work, The Removes, on September 19th at Hooch Craft Cocktail Bar in Aspen. This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Kristen Kay. If you missed today's show, you can go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Cross Currents is a production of Aspen Public Radio.